Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. A couple of weeks ago, I did a show with Georgi from Bulgaria, who you're about to listen to. But due to a technical error on my part, I actually lost the show. So we got together again on the 8th of May to do another show. And this time we also had Christopher from Germany, who was in on this show. So this is a very interesting show that you're about to hear. The Bulgarians were ruled by the Soviet Union. They were part of the Warsaw Pact, the half of Europe that fell under Soviet control at the end of World War II. So the Bulgarians know what the original Bolshevik Jewish Soviet communism was like, and they hated it. But they were very close to the Russians, and they know lots about communism and the Russians. Germany itself was split in two, and you had East Germany that fell under Soviet rule. Now, these Bulgarians can understand and read Russian with hardly any effort, and they can also understand most of Ukrainian. Now, Christopher and Georgi are both National Socialists, so they don't muck around on this issue of National Socialism. They're not lukewarm National Socialists. So in this interview, I ask them about the Russians, the war in Ukraine, Azov. What is Azov? We discuss the Jew, homosexual, cocaine sniffing, Zelensky. And we try to unpack and understand what is going on here. But what you're going to hear are primarily their views and their research. And you're going to hear stuff that I'm sure you've never heard before. Among the stuff that you're going to hear is that the Russians actually signed an agreement with the Americans quite a long time ago, acknowledging the independence of Ukraine. There are a whole bunch of things that the Russians are party to. They agreed to all kinds of things. And then there are all kinds of weird things, like the fact that Europe is totally dependent on oil and gas from Russia. And wait until you hear what the Europeans have to say on this score. Then also there's the issue of Germany. Is Germany a free country? And every one of my German friends, including German friends that I've known for a very long time, they all tell me, look, there is a secret agreement that the Germans were forced to sign by the Americans at the end of World War II, and that Germany is not a free country. Germany is under American military occupation until 2099 or something like that. Germany is not a free country. And the other thing is that Germany is also almost never ruled by actual Germans. The previous German leader, Merkel, for a long time, she's a Jewish communist from Poland. And she and her husband have bought land in South America where they're going to retire to. So they're not even going to stay in Germany. If people have got questions or they want to know more about the analyses of these guys, you can email me at my website and I will pass on questions to them. I also want to ask them for more detail on certain things that we discussed here, because we don't really know what the Russians are told by the Russian government. And in the Western world, there's a whole bunch of interpretation about the Russians and interpretation about Putin. After this show, I actually went and spent some time digging into my African Crisis Archive, which is probably going to be close to 150,000 articles that I want to put online. And I've got lots of old stuff there that I was looking through, including the time when Putin visited South Africa. Putin visited South Africa in 2006. I've got some TV photos of his visit. And Putin was hobnobbing with the blacks, hobnobbing with the ruling party. And Putin even requested a private meeting with the richest Jew in South Africa, Nikki Oppenheimer. So Putin and Nikki Oppenheimer got together in South Africa. When Putin was in South Africa, he never at any time had any interest in anything white. He never requested to meet any white leaders, any white groups, or even to see anything from the Boers, like the massive monument to Blood River in Pretoria, or any of those things. Putin was hobnobbing with the black commies big time. So I've got tons of other stuff to say about Putin and whether Putin is in any way, shape or form friendly to the whites of South Africa, something which I find impossible to believe. So we'll return to some other Russian topics later, but here is the discussion with Georgi and Christopher, and I think you're in for a lot of surprises from the Europeans. What do the Europeans have to say? Because remember, Russia has been involved with Europe for hundreds of years, and Europeans have fought Russians, Europeans have allied with Russians, Russians have invaded Europe. Europeans have a lot of experience with the Russians. So here's the interview. Hi there, Georgi and Christopher. It's really great to have you guys on my show. It's been a long time and I'm so delighted I've got both of you. Christopher in Germany and Georgi in Bulgaria. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me, and I'm looking forward to the topics.
I'm fine, thank you, and I'll share what I know.
Okay, guys. Well, I think maybe the opener should be everybody I'm coming across in South Africa, I can't even begin to believe this, but in South Africa, where we whites physically fought the Russians, especially the South Africans, Rhodesia as well. The Russians were our main enemy. The Russians were behind the blacks. The Russians were sending shiploads and shiploads of weaponry to the blacks. And we even had Russian officers, thousands of them. I think at one point something like 11,000 Russians were running around here in Southern Africa. 11,000 Russian military officers were helping the blacks. They even commanded battles, formed armies and everything. I cannot believe that whites in Southern Africa are pro-Putin, pro-Russia. And also, you know, a thing I've tried to point out, I'm coming across Americans, Christians, even National Socialists. Everyone's on the side of Putin and Russia. And I'm also saying to them, but hold on, you're racialists. The Russians murdered. They murdered millions in the Holodomor. They starved white people to death. The 60 million, who was it? Solzhenitsyn said 60 million white Christians were killed by the Jewish Bolsheviks. I mean, good God, how on? Hitler fought them. Hitler reckoned this is the most evil empire. It must be destroyed. How on earth can it be that we're supporting the Russians today? But anyway, you guys fire away. Tell me why you think the Ukrainians are the good guys. We will discuss the Jew rat Zelensky, who runs the show, a bit later. But you tell me your views, okay?
I think the reason that the people are supporting the Russians so much is very easy, because the Russians infiltrated the so-called alternative media. And they are spreading a lot of bullshit over the last decades, actually. Russia is an empire of lies. You know, you cannot believe anything from there, but the people don't understand that. So somehow the Russians managed the people see them as the good guys. And this is the fault of the alternative media, because the people are following these personalities in the alternative media, and they don't read books. They know nothing about Russia. They believe all the agitprop from Russia. And that's the reason why we are in a very difficult situation, where we have a lot of traitors in the West who would easily sell us to the Russians. And they are basically asking for their own destruction. Yeah, that's in short why I think that we're in this situation.
I agree with Christopher, and I will add that one of the major that the Russians dominating the alternative so-called nationalist circles is that most of these people don't know absolutely anything about the Russians. They are living out of Russia, like never read a Russian book, don't understand their psychology. Well, a lot of these people are Christians, so they had some kind of specific worldview that is kind of conservative, but also a lot of these people are cutards, so they believe ridiculous stuff, like ridiculous conspiracy theories that are absolutely evil, but somehow works for their mind. And then most of these people are reactionary. They are like reacting to the current things, which is also a problem of thinking. And a lot of these people that are claiming that are national socialists, that they're not national socialists. Otherwise, they will understand the geopolitical thinking of Adolf Hitler and the Third Reich back in the time, and why they were fighting the Soviet Union. It was ideological war, but also kind of Germany was forced to do it. And yeah, this is what I think about the current situation, and what actually Europe must do is to get rid of these foreign powers like Russia and America, and build kind of geopolitical identity based on the European race and culture.
I love that thinking. I love that thinking, because in the books and things I've read, like political stuff from America and so forth, the big thing is America has come out of World War II as the leader of the West, and it's a cock up. To be honest with you, America as the leader of the West is very pathetic, and they got serious weaknesses, like I've noticed with blacks, the white Americans and blacks, you know, after the South lost their war, America cannot handle the black issue, so they can't talk about blacks in any way that's meaningful. And they are always saving blacks. All you have to do is look at them in Haiti, where they've gone and they've actually built up a black country. The blacks destroy it. Then the Americans come, build it up again. Then the blacks destroy it. Then the Americans build it up again. I mean, it's crazy. Whereas the European countries had a much harder and firmer and realistic attitude towards blacks. Even small countries like Belgium and Portugal, you know, had much more balls when dealing with blacks. But America is like on its tiptoes around blacks. I've noticed that, to the point where I think America's afraid to even touch Africa, because they're so afraid of their own blacks and the mayhem that they can cause in their own country. And now, of course, America being filled with just Jews to the top. Oh, God, you know, America is the worst possible leader that we could have for the Western world. It's like having Britain as the leader of the Western world. I really want to see countries in Europe making decisions. I'd love to see Europe having its own identity. God, I'd love that. I'd love that. But can you guys also just give some input? Are there like specific Russian agents or shills or things that you can point out that the people are listening to or interacting with? Anyway, whatever thoughts you have, fire away.
Yeah, I could name some German ones, but I think they are not very relevant. Just in general, I would like to add that in the alternative media, there's very rare any kind of real journalism. Let's take Alex Jones, for example. You can say he has the biggest alternative media outlet in the USA. But all what he's doing is just cherry picking from the mainstream media and commenting that stuff. And for me, it's just a calculation. The Russians, they have enormous money from selling oil and gas and other resources. And let's say you have a streamer or a guy who makes videos or whatever, and you offer him $5,000 a month. This is 60K a year. This is nothing. And he has an audience of, let's say, 100,000 people. And you have a couple of them. So what I'm saying is, with a couple of million of dollars, you can have enormous influence on all these people. And our societies are very divided and becoming more and more divided between this left-wing, right-wing spectrum. And the people believe, rightfully so, that the mainstream media is somehow controlled or bought off or whatever. And I don't see why they cannot see that it is much cheaper and easier to influence, to buy this alternative media. Yeah. And for the Russians, this is actually, it's very cheap and very, and I don't understand this difference that people make, that they trust these, you know, streamers, video makers, whatever. They trust them without any doubt. If you say, oh, he might be a Russian agent or something. No. But CNN and blah, 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 and the New York Times is all owned by the you-know-who. And so I don't see this, why they cannot understand. My personal opinion, there's only media. There's no alternative media, mainstream media. That's all bullshit. There's media, and you can control it. You can buy it. And that it was done all the time, since the dawn of time. It was done like that. And there are people you can trust and people you cannot trust. And you have to check for yourself. You have to read. You have to be to educate yourself. And then you can make a decision, but not with just being a reactor. And saying, I'm always against the mainstream media, and so I always believe the opposite. That doesn't work.
You did right. A lot of people reason exactly like that, and they're saying like, oh, if Biden is for it, then it's got to be evil. Then Putin's got to be the good guy and stuff like that. And they don't understand that the Russians have got nuclear missiles, okay? you can't play with these people. These are people who've killed people. But anyway, sorry.
I can name some obvious Russian shills in the American sphere, and why the American speaking sphere is so pro-Russian is because, again, I will repeat, most of these people they don't understand the Russian thinking. They never ever read even Russian books. But also the Russians since time at least of the Bolshevik Revolution or even before that, they were quite, for them the Anglosphere was the enemy. So they're enemies and they started to think and change their type of thinking. And I can name some names. Eric Stryker, quite influential in these circles.
Eric Stryker?
Absolutely. He's totally pro-Russian show.
Nick Fuentes,
yeah.
Alex Jones,
obviously, the biggest one.
Alex Jones, I have no respect for anyway. What a bag of crap he is. Okay.
This Jew, the Orthodox priest Jew, was father.
Brother Nathaniel.
Brother Nathaniel, yeah. These type of people, there are many more. They're claiming that Putin is based and the Russians are defenders of the white culture in some way, but they're also traditionalists, and yes, they're not national socialists, but blah, blah, blah. They have all these special type of mental gymnastics, and generally you cannot debate these type of people. And I will go to what the Führer said back in the time, that he was naming these type of people that you cannot debate, like you cannot convince, because they always forgot that they lost the arguments, and they in arguments that are totally illogical. So with this type of people, there is no way to debate, really. But you can debate them maybe to convince the audience. So this was his understanding back in the time. And I believe that in the modern era, we need some kind of new type of propaganda. A modern type of propaganda to reach the people, because obviously the Russians and the other anti-white forces are much better in propaganda in these days. So, yeah, it's about the Ukrainians. Why these people? And I can name one, at least one in Europe, actually much more than one organization in Europe that are supporting them, but I won't go. But basically, major of the old nationalist organization, like NPD in Germany, the Nordic Resistance, unfortunately, even though I had a stream with them like two months ago. Front National, obviously, very much pro-Russian, the greatest pro-Russian party, actually, from the nationalist sphere. In Italy, these fascist parties, they are also pro-Russians. The ex-Golden Dawn in Greece. In Bulgaria, there are a bunch of pro-Russian shills, like one, the modern in a reincarnation of these called Возрождение, Renaissance, or whatever. They are very much pro-Russian. So in every country you have a strong so-called nationalist, but actually kosher nationalist party that are bought by the Russians. My understanding is that the war in Ukraine is just the beginning of processes that will end at some point, maybe not in the next few years, but it will end with the Third World War. And the Russian goal is to destroy the European Union and NATO, because they cannot deal with the combined force of NATO, especially with the United States. Obviously, they will lose with the war with the United States alone, not to count the European nation. Russia could deal one by one with every single European nation. Maybe not with the force of their rather overwhelming military, but with the force of resources and the force of money and with the force of nuclear weapons.
Okay, there are many things I'd like to just comment on there. Tell me a little bit. From your perspective as a Bulgarian, you are able to read Russian, and I assume you can understand when Russian is spoken. You might, I don't know if you can speak Russian, but you can listen to Russian and understand it. Just explain your vocabulary.
So basically, I understand 95-98% of what the Russians are saying. Since it's basically the modern Bulgarian and the modern Russian are built on old Bulgarian or Old Church Slavonic, whatever. So I've studied Old Church Slavonic, which is a classical language in Bulgaria, so like Latin. And that's why I can understand the Russians, even though I cannot speak Russian because it's kind of with different vocabulary than, not vocabulary, different construction of sentences with old Bulgarian. But anyway, so I understand that. I'm following Russian media and I can assure you that Russian media, like I'm following the alternative Russian media, that I'm following both Russian racial nationalists that not coincidentally are 95% of the Russian racial nationalists actually escaped in Ukraine and back in the time. And then I'm following the Russian opposition that are predominantly some kind of liberals like Navalny. Then I'm following Russian official propaganda. And the Russian official propaganda is more like, more and more like a Stalinist type propaganda. It's very woke-tier, and they're very often they're repeating the same things, like the theme that all Westerners are homosexuals. And Nazis at the same time, they're homosexual Nazis. then the Westerners are racist somehow, but the Russians are special type of traditionalists, but also they're not racist and they're supporting brotherhood and friendship between the races, which is their variant of multiculturalism, actually.
Yes.
Very often, especially these days, the Russians are threatening with nuclear weapons. Basically, there were threats from the at that point, this shit is that Zhirinovsky, this half and KGB and oligarch and pedophile and whatever, and very close friend of Putin, actually, from his close circle. So Zhirinovsky was threatening back in the time Berlin with nuclear bomb, Paris, Sofia, Bulgarian capital. Now this rhetoric is moved to the official Russian media. They made a couple of very threatening documentaries and TV shows directly threatening United States, Britain, and the rest of Europe with nuclear holocaust. Putin himself made a statement like I believe 2 years ago or 3 years ago, in which he said that the enemies of Russia will die in a nuclear hell, but the Russians themselves will go to heaven. and then in another statement, he said something that a world without Russia doesn't worth anything or something like that. So they're discussing nuclear war on the highest level. I mean, Putin said so. So I believe that at some point, maybe not now, not in the present state of the war in Ukraine, but at some point they will use tactical weapons, tactical nuclear weapons. They think that, so basically they started to attack Poland on the basis that Poland is a Nazi state. Then, of course, the Baltics are quite Nazis. Bulgaria, also Nazi state, Bulgarian national hero, general, personal friend of Adolf Hitler, General Hristo Lukov, is one of the examples how Bulgaria is a Nazi state, and we are holding annual march every year. And both American embassy and Russian embassy were protesting against this march, and the Israeli embassy, to be honest. So this is the three powers that are against the. So if you look at the what is going on, America and Russia are competitors. They are not enemies. The real enemies are the European nationalists, but the real European nationalists, because a lot of the people that are famous these days, they are not real nationalists or national socialists. They're just, I don't know, agents, warpers, controlled opposition.
Now this is very interesting. So these are the things that you're picking up in Russian. What is the Russian media and things like this denazification? I watch this. The Russians are constantly talking about they're in Ukraine for the process of denazification. And the only true Nazis I know of in the Ukraine is that Azov battalion, I believe. But I mean, I found that angle kind of bizarre. If I may, I'm kind of jumping the gun, but I'm just curious. What is the Russian media's? Let me ask it to you this way: the Russians themselves, how much access do they have to alternative media or other media that they're interested in? And in terms of what the Russians are hearing from their own state and government, what is their government telling them about the state of the war right now?
I would like to add something on the reason why they're talking so much about Nazis. So the founding mythos or myth of the Soviet Union at the beginning was the October Revolution, at the Red Revolution in 1919. But this was replaced in 1945 by their great patriotic war. So the great patriotic war is basically the foundation of Russia. That's all they have. That's their biggest achievement in their mind. Yes. And that is why it works so good with the Russian population to use this Nazi narrative and to basically to say we are still fighting the same war. The Europeans are still the Nazis, and we are still in this great patriotic war, or we are in it again, and we have to liberate Europe again, and we are the good guys. We have a mission. This is also related to their Orthodox Christian special ideas of their destiny to liberate the European people, to unite the Slavic people. So they have many of these crazy ideas, and that's why they use it, and it works especially good on their own population. As far as 90% of the Russians are basically watching state TV, and the state TV is as outrageous as Yogi just described it. It's mind blowing. It's a type of propaganda that would never work in the West. I mean, we have our specific propaganda here, but if you would serve this to an American or to a European, you would say, okay, this is too much. I cannot believe this bullshit. But the Russians obviously believe it. And as you know, if journalists and so on, or critical people who are criticizing Putin and so on, they just kill them. Or sent them to Gulag, you know, old Soviet style. So yeah, around 80% of the Russians just follow the state media, and they are listening to the exact bullshit Yogi just described. That's the sad situation with the Russians.
Wow. So in terms of your own understanding and monitoring, how do you monitor from Germany?
Yeah, I think we Germans, we have a special relation to Russia in many ways. I mean, we fought them in two big wars, and half of Germany or a huge part of Germany was occupied by the Russians for 40 years, while the other part of Germany was basically occupied by the Americans or Western allies. And we have the same problem here that many people are actually, not the normal sheeple people. The normal sheeple, they have some kind of instinct, so they are pro-Ukrainian. But from the dissidents part of the population, the majority is pro-Putin, especially this new right, the old right. They are more. They of course they understand the situation and they are on the Ukrainian side. And if you ask me to use a little bit of cheap psychology here, I think this is a lot of it is related of fear. The people fear the Russians, and I think the Russians know that. I mean, there's a reason why they're threatening us with nuclear annihilation and so on. So, and it works. The people are scared of a nuclear war, which will not happen, in my opinion. It will not happen, not with Putin. But yeah, and there's this fear, and then Putin is some kind of the strong guy, and there's a yearning for a strong guy in the West, for a leader type of figure. And they falsely see that. And of course, there's a lot of Christian bullshit, end times messianic crap, which is in all Western people. So it's a
Yes.
combination of all of these things.
That's very interesting, and I liked your analysis of how easy it is to buy the alt media. You're quite right. The alt media has got no access to money. It's cut off. The Jews have been cutting it off from every conceivable angle. So if somebody comes with a couple of bucks, it's very easy to buy off the alt media. But yeah, very interesting analysis. And I like and understand your stuff about the Great Patriotic War. In that sense, the Russians are like the British. We've spoken about the Russians and the British and the many similarities between them. It's like the British, their big claim to fame. Oh, we saved Europe from the Nazis. There's that sort of joke that I've seen in the past where you see the British children, one little white British child surrounded by Pakistanis and blacks and Muslims, and then it says, "At least we're not speaking German." At least we fucking beat those. At least we beat those fucking Germans. stupid, stupid pricks, bunch of idiots. And I can see that stupid British crap. By the way, did you guys see my re-release
Don't you think that this is some kind of projection? I mean, because that's actually what they did. They conquered other countries and they forced the people to speak English. So they think that the Germans will occupy them and force them to speak German, right? This is some kind of projection, in my opinion.
I mean, we can go into that whole thing about Britain conquering every. I looked it up. There are only 22 countries on Earth that Britain hasn't attacked. And like,
Yeah, but this was for freedom and democracy and Christianity and so on. They are the good guys.
Killing to make the Jews and the Scottish rich. I mean, South Africa, guys, I'm not joking with you. South Africa, the Second Anglo-Boer War. I can tell you now from my own researches and stuff, the Second Anglo-Boer War was probably instigated by the Rothschilds in Britain. There's virtually no question about it. That they got the British to kill the Boers, so that they could seize the gold mines, especially in the diamond mines, because the gold mines of South Africa at that time, the gold reserves of South Africa were equal to a quarter of the gold reserves on the entire earth. So that's why they had to come and kill Boers, chuck their women and children in concentration camps, literally blow up, I'm not joking with you, blow up their farms, kill millions of animals. Why did the whole British Empire have to invade a teeny weeny little white nation on the tip of Africa composed of like 1.5 million people? It's for the freaking gold and diamonds. And then a whole bunch of Jews pop in and they bought up everything. Yeah, and Cecil John Rhodes, the founder of Rhodesia, he was a Freemason. That's now openly acknowledged. He was a Freemason. And he even openly said, "My master, Mr. Rothschild." And do you know that the British soldiers in South Africa got a Christmas card with presents? Every single one. And can you believe it took half a million British and Empire soldiers to come to South Africa to crush a little nation of 1.5 million whites? Took 500,000 troops, and every one of the 500,000 troops got a Christmas card and presents from the Rothschilds, and I've got image copies of it, and the Rothschilds thanked them for all the good work they were doing in South Africa, killing the whites of South Africa.
I mean, geez.
Also, not to forget that at the time there was no Suez Canal. So the tip of Africa, the Cap, is a very important geostrategical position when you have to you know you have to do the trade from the Indian Ocean to the Atlantic Sea, and yeah, it was very important to control the South African Sea, so to say, and to have harbors there.
Yeah, good point. Good
It's
point.
similar situation with Ukraine and the Russian Empire right now. I mean, Ukraine in a European, in comparison with the other European countries, actually it's not a small country at all. Like 44 million people, like a bigger territory than France, but attacked by enormous country like Russia, with 140 something million population, I believe. And this, and because you mentioned the Rothschilds, the people are always talking about Zelensky, talking about the Jewish oligarchs behind Putin, and how Putin actually is anti-Semite. He's like really foul Semite, and it is speculation if he is half Jewish or Mischling or whatever, crypto Jew, but it's not a speculation that he likes Jews. He
Yes.
literally likes Jews.
Yes. And he,
And
if I may interject, he even apologized to Israel. I think he phoned the Israeli Prime Minister or something over that remark that was it Lavrov made that Hitler was part Jewish. And so now just because the Israelis and the Jews are upset, he apologized to them. And
This, by the way, is very interesting what Lavrov said, because basically it's a lie.
of course.
Basically, it's a old lie since the time of the political struggle of the NSDAP. Before that, they were struggling against the communists. The communists in Germany were financed by the Soviet Union. And how you basically, this is what I explained to my people here, that the anti-Semitism on its own, without National Socialism, is actually is counterproductive, because it's basically baseless. It's just a type of racism which is, yes, the Jews are unpleasant and they're parasitic race, but you must have some kind of other how to say, how you must understand why you don't like the Jews, and the National Socialism explains why the Jews are destructive. So so the communists in the Third Reich actually were attacking Adolf Hitler that he was Jewish. This was attempt to take part of the support of the National Socialist Party, right? So basically, Lavrov used this old lie and throw it in the public, and then the Israelis start to spurk, right, again against the Russians. Because this is kind of insulting for the Israelis. But Putin apologized. He apologized. But my point was that the oligarchs, that a lot of these oligarchs, like there are different data, of course, between some people said that 60% of the oligarchs that are supporting Putin are Jewish, some people said that 75%. For example, but there is a something. For example, there was a famous non-Jewish oligarch, at least I thought it was non-Jewish, called Deripaska. And I thought that he's Russian. He doesn't look Jewish at all. And in one quite obscure interview, he mentioned that he has a great grandmother that was Jewish. So how he could be counted like a Jew, Michelin, or non-Jew, I don't know. But generally speaking, the personal friend of Putin, Rotenberg, has the factories that are producing the so-called smart weapons that are bombarding the Ukrainians. Another famous oligarch, Friedman, he is producing the state propaganda against Ukraine. There are a lot of most likely one of the daughters of Putin is also married to a Jewish banker. So there are a lot of things to be said about the Jews behind Putin. And to be honest, the white people must start to understand who is the biggest evil. To be honest with you, I've never heard about Zelensky before the start of the war. I had some understanding that they are ruled by a shitty, liberal, corrupt government, but I didn't know that Zelensky is a president. And that he's corrupt and that he's Jew, to be honest. I knew about the greater danger that the Putin is Jews, because people must understand that in the present world, there is not a single state that is not infiltrated by Jews, but some states are much more dangerous than others. Russians have a greater plan for reestablishing the Soviet Union. They could call it whatever, Greater Russia, Russian Federation, Neo-Soviet Union, Soviet Union, whatever. It doesn't matter. They're building Eurasian empire. And this infiltration and demoralization in the Europe, this is just the beginning. They want to create this, and there will be a wave of immigrants or racial invaders in Europe, and civil wars and hunger and maybe new wave of a pandemic or whatever, and then the Russians will attack like a large attack, because right now Russia can do jack shit. They cannot attack with nuclear weapons because they will be annihilated. They cannot win. Basically, they have problems with dealing with Ukraine, and Ukraine is not really like a really well-equipped army. They have the fighting spirit, obviously, but they are not really well-equipped. I doubt that they can deal with the Polish army that is NATO-equipped and trained, and I don't think that they will deal with the French, German, and British army. So I think that the only solution for the Russians is to destabilize and to destabilize and to destabilize. And another thing, they're waiting for the Chinese, because Chinese are in very specific situation right now. They cannot leave Russia to lose the war, they cannot leave the Russian regime to be totally destroyed, but also China needs the resources and the territory of Russia. So they need weak Russia, but not destroyed Russia. And also the Chinese are preparing for the major clash with the United States. The Chinese are much smarter than the Russians, and they know that they are not ready for the major clash. But after 7, 8, 10 years, they will be much, much better conditioned than now. So what to say? I mean, a lot of things will happen. In 2024, most likely, Trump will be reelected. And there is a, if you remember back in 2018, he threatened Europe that he will, American forces could retreat from European theater at some point. And if America is destabilized on the home front, like some Negro riots, if China press from the in the Pacific, maybe Europe will be left alone to deal with Russia.
I would like to add something for the general strategy of the Russians. Maybe people don't understand that. The Russians are trying to destabilize the West, and they're doing this in supporting Black Lives Matter, radical Islam, climate activism, environmentalism, all kind of dissident groups that are destabilizing the society are supported by the Russians. And when you read the old books from the Soviet deflectors or the deflectors from the satellite states of the Soviets, for example, Jan Sena, We Will Bury You.
Jan Sena.
He described very well what their goals are. First of all, America needs to leave Europe. America needs to be isolated. And then they have specific plans for each country. For example, England needs to be isolated. Germany will get gifts from the Russians and more influence in Europe. And they have specific plans for the Italians, for example, where there's a strong communist party, and so on and so on. And of course, they adapted their goals and they adapt their strategy all the time. But in general, it's the same. And that's what the people don't understand. If you are a devoted Christian, Putin will say, oh, I'm a Christian too. I was baptized, I'm going to the church and so on. If you are a traditionalist, he would say, yeah, I'm traditional. And if you are a globalist, he would say, yeah, look at Russia. We are totally globalists. I mean, we have 132 different ethnicities in Russia and so on. So they will just give you what you like. I'll make a simple example. We have enormous gas resources in Europe, but they are only accessible through fracking.
Where?
In Germany, in Greece, Ukraine, for example. Ukraine could be a petrol state. They have enormous resources of oil and gas. And in Germany, for example, we have huge gas resources, but they are only accessible through fracking. And if you remember this anti-fracking campaign, where they showed, fire coming out of the sink and whatever. And this anti-fracking campaign was financed with $91 million by the Russians.
You joke.
Yeah, you can look it up.
So you Europeans, you Germans, don't need to buy that gas from Russia. You got your own gas.
Technically not, but they made a propaganda action, and now fracking is illegal in Germany.
My goodness.
The same thing in Bulgaria. We, in the shelf of the Black Sea, we have gas resources, but like 12 years ago, One of the kosher nationalist parties that obviously is financed by Russia and is led by an ex-communist that somehow rejected communism. they made campaign about against these fracking, right? And that's why we are 90-something% dependent on the Russian gas that actually was stopped by the Russians recently.
Oh, man.
So basically this what is going on was prepared like a 3D chess or 6D chess by the Russians. And what happened back in 2016, do you remember when we were talking about the first wave of refugees, and I told you that I think that some outer power is behind that, because these refugees, these Arabs, these whatever, because we don't know how many of them were Syrians actually, they were quite well organized. Quite well organized from foreign sides, and they were promising them free white women and a lot of money and easy jobs and free homes and whatever and whatever. And a lot of these people came from regions that were heavily, heavily influenced by the Russians.
You remember that many of them
weren't some Israeli companies and Jewish NGOs also involved in this stuff of getting blacks and people from Africa into Europe?
Of course, but you must not forget that I believe that the second official or the third official language in Israel is actually Russian. They had like 30% of Ukrainian and Russian Jews there. So, So this is like another interesting thing, like a Jewish prophecy. This guy Ben Lazar, this Lubavitch shit, that is the personal friend of Putin and his Rabbi, to say at least, he posted a video just a few days, I believe 2 days before the start of the war, and he said very strange things like the Mashiach is coming, the new era, blah blah blah. So there are some Jewish occult stuff behind that also.
Oh,
so maybe
wow.
There are also So, strange, huh? It's very strange. So basically another thing, Putin is very much into numerology. And a lot of people were right when they were talking about dates, like they were predicting that 2022 will be the start of the war, but he waited 2 days basically, and on the 23rd was on the 23rd of May was a celebration of the Red Army. Official date since the time of the Second World War, I don't know why, the Red Army had some kind of holiday. And on the 24th, in the morning, in 4 o'clock in the morning, which was the prediction of Zhirinovsky, if you remember, Zhirinovsky basically said
November 21, he said that.
Yeah, in November, actually. I thought it was in December. But he said that on 22nd, in 4 o'clock in the morning, we will be a great power again, or something like great country again.
Oh, wow. Did he give a day but not a month?
No. He gave the exact date in the Duma, which is the Russian parliament, in November 21. He said speech in the Russian parliament in November 21, he gave the exact date for the attack on Ukraine.
You mean that
you can look it up. The video is actually on YouTube, even with the English translation.
Are you serious? He said in February, February
22. No. He said in the Duma in November 21. He said on the 22nd in February, we will be a great power again, and we will surprise the world or shock the world or something like that.
Yes. Yeah.
Wow. So this was in Okay, so they planned it and they knew what they were going to do.
Yeah, the Americans obviously knew. I mean, do you remember before the war when Biden said he asked the Americans to leave Ukraine and that he's sure that there will be a war and so on, and that, you know, the alternative media said, Biden is warmongering. The Russians will not attack. Don't believe Biden and so on. But he knew.
Wow.
I think that this is a long-term plan that is in fruition at least since 2010. Because around that time, I will repeat this story again, but this is also quite interesting. In 2010, in Bulgarian nationalist forums, there was a rumor, and back in the time it sounded quite ridiculous, to be honest. And I was mocking the guy that was defending this theory. So he claimed, an anonymous guy, he spread this idea that the Russians are planning to take Ukraine. This is 2010, 4 years before the Maidan, and to take Ukraine. And then they will start an apocalyptic war in Europe. And they will destabilize and they will attack in alliance with Turkey. And there are a lot of strange things. And he said that that the Russians are doing is called Gog and Magog. And I was laughing at that point because it's a stop with your Bible bullshit, right?
Yes.
But right now, it sounds like maybe it was some kind of Russian or maybe Bulgarian communist psyop. They are just looking for a reaction from the nationalists, how the nationalists will react on these things. I don't know. But 2014, when this thing happened, I said, what the fuck? I mean, this guy was right.
Maybe we should talk about why the Russians are actually in Ukraine. Besides biolabs with birds spreading COVID and fighting Nazis and stuff like that. I think this is also a lack of knowledge. Why the Russians want Ukraine to be part of Russia? That's an interesting question.
Okay, if I may just say something before you get on to that. I think it's an excellent point. I recently, in the last 2 months, I actually was trying to get my old African crisis archives out and to convert them so that I could view them for the first time in more than a decade. And when I'd finished and I was starting to search through them and just look and see what articles I had, I came across two freaking articles that I'd published a long time ago that now, with hindsight, these articles have really made me think. I had started my original African crisis website about 6 weeks before 9/11. Of course, I didn't know something big was going to go down. And when I'd started it about 3 weeks or so before 9/11, I published an article, and I was taking the entire article along with its source code, source, etc. And I published it. And I published a very strange article that there is going to be a huge war in the Middle East, and that the trigger event was, and it said some stuff about it. I'm going to do a special video just about that article, but it came from Russian sources, and it was about 3 weeks before 9/11. And at the time, this meant nothing to me, but I was also back then in that Christian state of mind of like World War III and big wars and stuff. And so I saw this weird Russian prediction, and that weird Russian prediction, I must tell you, when you look at it now, you'll see the Russians knew something about 9/11 before it happened. But I'd published that, and then I found another article that I published. I'm not sure if it was in 2004 or 2005. And it also had a Russian source. And the Russians said, and it was from a Russian general who was in charge of a Russian military college. And this Russian general made the following predictions. He said that in 2015, there would be the beginnings of World War III. And he said it would occur because of the way the Americans are moving, moving towards the Russian territories, you know, those Georgia, Ukraine, that kind of thing. I don't think he mentioned any specific territories, but he said as a result of 9/11, the American war on terror is bringing them closer and closer to Russia, and that round about 2015, there's going to be the beginnings of World War III, and it's going to take place on Russian soil. So 2015 is a year after Maidan. But I mean, this article was published like 10 years earlier. And then he went on to say that by 2030, the United States and China would be at war. And nowadays, when I look at this, this stuff is not bad. But what I'll do is I'll take those two articles and I'll make a video about it, because they were both from Russian military sources. And looking back now, I'm like, whoa, you know, there's some serious foreknowledge. And I can show you where it came from. And I published it back then. At the time, I just published saying, well, you know, maybe, maybe not, but it sounds kind of strange, but you never know. But now with hindsight in 2022, I'm saying, whoa, those are the most accurate things. And that 9/11 one, I must tell you, when I read through that whole thing, you're going to fall on your back. The Russians knew, man. And I want to tell you that I'm now convinced, I'm now utterly convinced that European intelligence, including Germany and Italy, knew that 9/11 was a Mossad operation. I think probably most of Europe knew that all the people in intelligence know that the Mossad did 9/11. No question about it. But when you read that Russian thing, it's very interesting. Anyway, so just my 5 cents. Fire away with why. And also, if you can comment on the bio labs, because people were talking about these bio labs, and I was reading it, and I was saying, but you know, I can't see that this is the reason to go to war. If the Ukrainians or the Americans or the CIA want to do bio labs, the CIA has been doing deadly, deadly stuff in America. Why do they need to be doing weird little things in Ukraine? So if you guys can answer all those questions. Okay, bye.
Maybe Christopher must start, and because he asked very good questions. Why the Russians are attacking Ukraine? This is much more important, because basically the bio-labs are excuse for the going, for the dull masses, so to say, because
especially in these times of corona and so on, this is a very good talking point. I would like to add something to what Jan just said, because this in a way proves that there's also a secret collaboration between the superpowers. Why? Let's say the Russians have secret informations. They have intelligence informations about who's responsible for 9/11, for example, and other things. Why they're not exposing it now? And they say, okay, now we are attacking the United States. We are attacking the establishment. We are opening our files and we are showing it to the world what they did. Not happening. Also vice versa.
Absolutely.
This is not happening. This is also not happening. So there's a secret collaboration in the background anyway. And don't forget that Putin also did these house bombings in Moscow, these terror attacks, which when the FSB was caught doing it by the police, the Russian police caught the Russian intelligence service bombing houses in Moscow, and that was the reason for the second war against Chechnya. So it's very interesting, the similarities between George W. Bush and Vladimir Putin. They have very, very much in common.
Wow.
In their way to power. Another thing is that NATO is encircling Russia and attacking Russia and getting closer to Russia. This is a narrative that the Russian used even in post-Soviet times. This is a talking point from Russian imperialism since the dawn of time. These countries that joined NATO in Eastern Europe, they asked for it. They asked, please, we want to join NATO. We fear Russia. So, and the thing that happened in Ukraine proves that they were right.
Yes.
So, and
actually,
Russia, and Russia agreed. You can look it up. You can look the agreements up. Everybody, ask anybody to look it up. Russia agreed to that. And one of the conditions was that these countries actually only have limited armies. If you look at these Eastern European countries which joined NATO, they have very weak armies and they are very weak NATO troops. And this was a part of the deal. So the Russians are lying there as well. And another thing is why they are removing the buffer state in a neutral Ukraine and moving closer to NATO. They're saying NATO is moving closer to us, so we move closer to NATO by taking Ukraine. So this is absolute nonsense.
Well, if I may interject there, you know, when Russia says, oh, you know, NATO is moving to us, I said to people, but hold on, go and read European history. How many times have Russian armies walked across Europe? And fought in Europe and crushed Europeans and controlled Europeans. I mean, in the Seven Years' War of Frederick the Great, the Russians got into Berlin. I think they sacked Berlin, and the Russian armies have been all over Europe. In the time of Napoleon, the Russian armies were in Austria. The Russians and the Austrians were going to invade the French. And just look at just the other day, the end of World War II, who owned half of Europe? The freaking Russians. There were Russian tanks killing Hungarians. The Russians controlled what? Bulgaria, Yugoslavia, you name it. Half of freaking Europe had Soviet forces on them. So if the Russians are a bunch of crybabies, you're all on our doorstep, what about the many times and the many dead Europeans over centuries of Russian armies that have dashed all over Europe, man?
I think that it's important to understand Russia is an empire. Despite of all rebranding, you can call it Soviet Union, Russia, Russian Empire, whatever. It's an empire. So when they are strong, they try, and the enemies are weak or the surrounding states are weak, they expand. They try to conquer and to get bigger. They fought wars against the Ottomans, the Turks, basically, the Swedes, the French, the Germans. And don't forget their expansion to the east. They took parts of China, Mongolia. They fought wars in Afghanistan. And so this is an empire. And when they are weak, they shrink a little bit, you know, the people gain their independence or whatever. And now we're getting in the next cycle, they feel strong and they start conquering again. It's 1,200 years of imperialism. Russia is an empire. And it doesn't matter how they name it. It's the same with this rebranding of, Cheka, KGB, FSB. They're just changing the name of the intelligence, but it's always the same.
I will go into the direction that the simple explanation why Russia wants to engulf Ukraine is that they want to engulf all of Europe. Basically, the thing with Russia is that it doesn't matter. Putin or even Navalny or Rabbi Yeshu or whatever will be on the throne in Moscow, it doesn't matter because he will do the same. He needs to expand the territory of Russia because the Russians don't have natural borders, like some kind of geographical protection for their borders. So they will expand more and more and more and more. But the problem is that the present day Russia is not the Soviet Union. They are weaker. Soviet Union kind of barely was on the technological terms with the NATO armies. And with the numbers, they were balancing the power of NATO. But the present day Russian army is not of the strength of the, I don't know, they have problems with Ukraine. They obviously are failing in Ukraine. This is almost three months a war that is quite long war, quite intensive war. It's not a war intensive conflict. What is the choice of Russia? So the choice of Russia is to either swing some bullshit on the victory parades and say we won, actually we denazified Ukraine, and to continue with the provocation and destabilization of Ukraine and the rest of Europe. Then the other option is to put into call mobilization or partial mobilization, because they, interestingly enough, I believe that Ukrainians actually are outnumbering the Russians at that moment. The other option is using a tactical nukes, but I think that is a little bit too early for that. And I don't know. There are not many options for the Russia. So one of the reasons, as I said, is expansion, natural expansion of the Russians. They want to expand more and more and more and more. If they could reach the Atlantic Ocean, it will be the best. But I think that the most realistic thing is that they want to destroy Poland, to take the ones of the Balkans, because this is very important, and eventually to border Germany or to take Germany. You must remember that Marx wanted this world revolution of the proletariat to take place in Germany, and the present-day Russian leadership, maybe not exactly Bolsheviks, but they're definitely listening to what the old Jew wrote. So, I don't know. Germany will be a battlefield at some point. This is what I think.
The Russians always had an eye on Germany. A friend of mine put it that way. He said, without Ukraine, Russia is just a country. And with Ukraine, it's an empire.
Empire, yeah.
At the times of the Soviet Union, the Soviet Union had a total population of 280 million. Russia has a population of 140 million, roughly. And when they conquer Ukraine, they have a population plus of 44 million, and they need people. Russia needs people. because they have a shrinking population. They have the lowest birth rate from all white countries, if you can call it a white country. They have the highest abortion rate. They have the highest divorce rate, and so on. So it's very bad with the Russian population, and this is some kind of their last chance. Because they won't have enough soldiers and engineers and scientists in the future. The country is in real problems. And with the Ukrainian, they can gain workers, taxpayers, soldiers. Ukraine has a big heavy industry, weapons industry. Many of the Russian weapons are actually produced in Ukraine, or even the nuclear missiles of the Russians were maintained in Ukraine. So the Ukraine is very important for the Russians to boost their industry, to boost their population, to get control over the Black Sea. The harbor in Sevastopol is very important because they don't have ice-free harbors and so on. So this is a very cold geostrategical calculation. Nothing to do with denazifying or biolabs or anything. This is just... This is just bullshit. It's and don't forget that the Russians, they are taking a high risk. I was absolutely astonished that they're actually trying this, because this is very risky and they are investing a lot. It's like a gambling, right? So what they gain, what they can gain, must be much bigger than what they are investing or what they are risking. Of course, it didn't work out like they expected it to work out, but I was actually very surprised that they are trying this and that they are risking so much to gain Ukraine. So, and even by that, you can judge how they calculate the worth of Ukraine for them.
If I may just interrupt and add something, Putin himself has said that the greatest disaster, I think, of the 20th century was the collapse of the Soviet Union. And another thing that shocked me, I couldn't believe it when I saw it. Somebody pointed out, oh, but there are Russian tanks with Soviet Union flags on it. And I went and I looked and good God, that was so. And there was another place. There was some town, I think a town in the south, where the Russians put up a huge flag. And when that flag goes up, it's a freaking hammer and sickle. The hammer and sickle is the old Soviet Union.
Can you imagine that 20 to 60 million Russians were killed by the communists? And this guy is not saying the creation of the Soviet Union was the worst thing that happened to us. No, the fall of the Soviet Union was the worst thing that happened to us.
Yes, he's a communist.
This tells you everything that you need to know about this guy. So fuck about these tens of million people that got killed by the commies. It's a shame that we couldn't kill more.
So basically, also, we'll continue with the Ukraine was very important for the Soviet invasion plans. Ukraine had one of the two tank constructor schools in the Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. Actually, most of the best examples of the Soviet military equipment was constructed and designed in Ukraine. Also, they had in the 40 million is we mentioned that. That's why they were planning to do this thing as peaceful as possible, not because they love their brothers from Ukraine, whatever. No, they wanted population and to assimilate the population. But now they changed the rhetorics. First, they were fighting only the Nazis, a clique of Nazis that are enslaving the Ukrainians and preventing Ukrainians to join their brothers. Now they're talking about destruction of the Ukrainian nationalism and Ukrainian nation. And they're talking about, and this is state television, they're talking about creating re-education camps for Ukrainians.
Whoa, that's back to the Soviet Union.
And they were Also another thing, you remember this nasty Jew that he was praising the rape of the German women. There are also Jews on the semi-official channels of the government that are praising the rape of the rapist of Bucha. So basically, what we have now is some kind of return of the Soviet Union, and whatever Zelensky is, corrupt Jew, Mason, whatever, the Ukrainians on the ground, I would say that they have all reasons to hate the Russians historically, not only because of this war, but because of many genocides in the past, including during the time of the Tsarist Russia. They were quite suppressed back in the time. And they had their nationality. There are a lot of historical sources for that. So they're not fake nation, as the Russians claim. And furthermore, I will say that Kiev is much older city than Moscow. I would say that the calculation of the Russians went wrong, but this was the first phase of the war, the Russian blitzkrieg, or as I call it, blitzkrieg. It failed. They suffered defeat for the first battle of Kiev, but I think that there will be a second battle of Kiev at some point. Right now, what is going on in Donbass is interesting. Maybe we'll start to talk about that at this point. But let's say that for the plans of the Soviet Union back in the time, Ukraine was very important as a base, as a industrial potential of Ukraine was very, very important. That's why there were a lot of money invested in Ukraine from the Soviet Union for the factory base. This Azovstal was built back in the time of the Soviet Union. That's why there were nuclear bunkers under the factory. And basically, there are a lot of stuff done. So basically, the idea was that these evil capitalists could nuke the plant, but the very important personnel that was working on the plant will survive and continue to work some in the other factories and produce steel. So basically, right now, I think that the Ukrainians won time of relative peace for the rest of Europe and maybe for the world. Maybe 5, 10, 15 years of peace. Because the Chinese knew for the plans of the Russians. Because if you remember, before
Are you there? Hello?
I think we lost Yogi.
Ah, it does seem like that.
Oh, so basically Ukraine is very important for the continuing the expansionistic plans, but the Putin switched to plan B, which is destruction, because they realized that they fucked the whole thing with a fast war with Ukraine. So the next plan is, I believe, to destroy as much of Ukraine and destabilize the Ukrainian state. I think that the West will create a martyr or hero from Zelensky, which is not very good for the nationalists, to be honest. But on the other hand, I believe that this war is also making Azov and the other, because there are other nationalist battalions and regiments, because Azov is not battalion, but regiment, in Ukraine. And they're actually the backbone of resistance against the Russians. So this is also a good thing.
Okay, if I may.
What I notice
Yeah.
is, sorry.
Go for it.
Yeah, I would like to add that there were interesting articles in RIA Novosti, which is a Russian newspaper, because Yogi is right. They changed the narrative from, yeah, that the Ukrainians are basically Russians and they are our brothers and we are liberating them. And when you read it now, they basically say no Ukrainian is innocent. They're all Banderites and Ukro-Nazism, they call it now. They have their own term for it now. And they say we need to occupy the country. We need to re-educate them. They cannot govern themselves. We need to split up the country in several small countries. So the similarities to what they did to Germany after the Second World War are striking. So they basically have the same plans, split the country, take over the education system, change the school books, occupy all the TV stations and radios, so all of that, re-educate them, brainwash them, destroy the Ukrainian language, destroy Ukrainian national identity. And I think that the Ukrainians, they're realizing that, and that is the reason why they're fighting so hard against it, because they know that this will be the end of Ukraine as a nation and as a people, most likely.
Oh,
If they
wow.
lose this war, for them it's about everything, lose or win, this will be their end. There is no, they cannot expect a mercy from the Russians now, because the Russians thought this would be a thing like, a flowers war. We will just enter the country and they will welcome us, and Zelensky will flee, and the Ukrainian army will collapse. That's why they actually, I think at the beginning, the Russians had like 240,000, 230,000 men in total. And to make a good comparison, the Americans were with 500,000 men in Vietnam and they failed. So the Russian army at the beginning was actually way too weak to make a war. So I think the terminology they're using when they call it a special operation,
That was
they're
good
actually right about that.
propaganda.
They
That
really
was
thought
good. That was good propaganda.
We can do we can do it like in Crimea in 2014. We can do it in a bigger way. We can repeat this, and our army just—I mean, that's how they acted. They basically drove down the roads. Remember the traffic jams and so on. It was mind-blowing, and they just didn't expect that. Actually heard that from a Russian, that he crossed the border and the Ukrainians started shooting at them, and they thought, what's going on? Why they are shooting at us, right? So this was a total mind-blowing miscalculation about the reaction of the Ukrainians, and the Ukrainians have every reason to fight like they do.
This is very interesting. We're getting on to the military stuff, which I think we need to almost do like another show on the military stuff, but you're quite right. I also was looking at this stuff in the beginning. This was one of the first points when the invasion started, right in the beginning. I wrote my first article about this Russian invasion, and with the tanks pouring down towards Kiev, and then the others coming from Donbass and the other sides to Kharkiv and what have you. But I was watching Kiev because I've got quite a fascination, and this is for white survival purposes, especially for us in South Africa. I've got a lot of fascination with the military importance of fighting in a city. Fighting a, let's call it a Stalingrad type of conflict, and that it could work for whites. So when I saw the Russians invading, and then I saw that they were saying they're going to capture Kharkiv, Kiev, and then they said this invasion's going to be quick, and the Russians will control Kiev within 3 to 5 days, and I thought, oh, and then I had a quick look, and I thought, but hold on. This is a big country and there's 44 million people. But hold on, the Russians were fighting in Afghanistan And they were beaten in Afghanistan by a bunch of ragheads, armed with some what's it, Stinger missiles against the Russian helicopters and stuff. But I thought, how can the Russians just take over, first of all, a country of 44 million? And the second thing is Kiev itself is like 2.8 million people in one city. And I was like, whoa. And then I wrote this article and I said, if the Ukrainians just fight like street by street for Kiev, then I think that this is not going to be just a 5-day job. I don't think it's possible. And if the Rus and if they can hold out, if 44, and I was thinking, if 44 million whites could fight the Russian army, then surely they stand a chance of even winning a guerrilla war eventually. But I followed it, and on day two, I remember on day two, the Soviet forces were already on the outskirts of Kiev, and because I was going to follow the Battle of Kiev hour by hour. And the first 3 days, I was like on the internet all the time, like looking for videos. I want to see this battle for Kiev because I want to see, is it going to be as easy as they think? And by the fourth day, by the end of the third day, I realized, oh no, it's actually already starting to slow down. So I could see, yeah. But when the Russians came, they were like firing cruise missiles, doing bombing raids and everything. And I reckon it was, you remember the Americans with the Americans had that term in Iraq, what was called shock and awe. It was like Putin's shock and awe. He's just coming in with the tanks and the missiles and everything. Everyone's going to flee. Everyone's going to give up. Like you say, Zelensky's going to run away. The Ukrainians are going to quit. And somewhere in there, those Ukrainian, I think the Ukrainian army was much tougher, probably from the time of Donbass. And they'd already been fighting the Russians for a couple of years, and they seemed to be much tougher. I think everybody was surprised, even the United States and Europe especially were surprised that they could even hold out for a couple of days, if I may say so.
I can tell you from German military doctrine, and I think nowadays it's a Western military doctrine.
Go for it.
First of all, you don't attack from three directions. You're looking for the weak spot, and you go for the weak spot, and you break through there. So this is first Russian mistake. Second Russian mistake is if you want to attack, you need 3-to-1 advantage because defending is easier than attacking. So you need three times the forces. If the enemy is on a, let's say, I don't know the English term, on a defensive retreat, retreating but fighting back,
I understand.
we're talking about 6-to-1 advantage. And for a city fight, it's calculated 8-to-10-to-1 advantage. So if you have 100,000 people defending Kiev, you basically need 1 million men to conquer it. That's how it's calculated. The Russian army is about 900,000, a million men strong, but this is misleading because many of them, for example, are in the Navy. They have enormous amount of nuclear submarines, nuclear missiles they cannot use. By the way, they only have a military budget of 60 million billion in English, and the Americans have 600 billion a military budget.
Correction, since that year America had 780 billion.
Only, okay.
Only.
So basically, what I'm saying is that without total mobilization, so the Russians need much, much more manpower if they want to defeat the Ukrainians, which have an army of, I think, 200,000, 250,000. Which and you have to see with these 250,000 Russians, there are people who are cooking, who are in the hospitals, mechanics and so on. And the Ukrainians, they all have that in their countries. Their mothers can basically cook for them, right? They can all go and fight, and so actually, at the moment, when the Ukrainians started to fight back and the Western countries decided to support the Ukrainians, the Russians were fucked.
Yes.
Numerically, they couldn't win it. I mean, you know that in the Second World War, the Germans tried to avoid to fight in a city on all cost. For example, Leningrad, it was just encircled. It was never entered. And as you saw, the Stalingrad thing was a big mistake. It didn't work out because it's super hard to conquer such an enormous city. So it's obvious from the constellation from the beginning that the Russians really thought we will just walk in, they will surrender, and we will take it. And when the Ukrainians started to fight back, they were shocked. And I think that the Russians, I mean, they can threaten us all the time with their nuclear weapons. They are still shocked. And they know that they are fucked. I don't see them conquering it. They just can. And basically what we have now is almost World War One, a fighting style where they are just holding the lines, sitting in trenches and using artillery barrages on the enemy. That's the situation at the moment.
It is interesting that you mentioned Stalingrad, because Stalingrad is not far away from the battlefields of Ukraine. Yeah. And basically it was a mistake, but it was actually not a mistake, because the Germans needed to capture Stalingrad. It was a must to do it. I mean, and I'm mentioning that because basically what one of the narratives of the pro-Russian side is that actually Ukraine was threatening the security of Russia. And somehow, actually, the Russians are preemptively striking the same as Germany did against the Soviet Union. But the situation is kind of different. First of all, Ukraine was not in NATO. If Ukraine was in NATO, Russia will never attack.
If I remember correctly, the Soviet Union concentrated their army on our borders. And and if I remember correctly, this time the Russians concentrated their army on the Ukrainian borders, not vice versa. So I don't really understand that talking point.
Yes, exactly.
But the bio-ups and child trafficking and Q told me that Putin is the white hat and he is cleaning Ukraine from the bio-ups and the pedal rigs and anyway, so basically why Stalingrad is important and why Russia could feel threatened by Ukraine. Theoretically, it makes sense, because if Ukraine was in NATO, which, by the way, Biden said is not a question for the nearest future. They're talking about the nearest 20, 30 years. So basically, Ukraine could enter NATO after 30 years, and that's why Putin is attacking right now. Maybe from geopolitical standpoint, it makes sense, but actually doesn't make sense, because even entering NATO doesn't mean that Ukraine will attack straight away. So anyway, so basically Ukrainian army, the thing that the people are so surprised, because they're not very well equipped, to be honest. They received some patches of, before the start of the war, some patches of javelins, and when the shit started to smell stronger, leading European powers sending defensive weapons like Panzertrei and N-walls. But this is all infantry white weapons. It's not tanks, not rocket systems, not anti-aircraft systems, nothing complicated. Now, the idea, the excuse of the Western powers was that you need more time to train this for these more complicated systems. Actually, the America and the rest of the European powers, they didn't want to irritate the Russians. Obvious, this is obvious. Just for comparison, for all these years in Afghanistan, which was strategically very important for the American Empire, because this is the same thing what the Brits, the spiritual and genetic fathers of the America, did in the Great Game. They were trying to capture Afghanistan. So basically, the Americans invested for all these $3 trillion for all these years in Afghanistan. $3 trillion.
That was insane. When I heard that, you know, the wastage of American money, it just boggles my mind. How could you even spend $3 trillion on Afghanistan? It just amazed me.
And for comparison, they spent it for 8 years, $2 billion for Ukraine.
No. Victoria Nuland said in 2014, do you remember Victoria Nuland, who said fuck the EU and stuff like that?
Yes, the Jewish.
And she said we invested $5 billion, but the Russians saying that they invested that in the Maidan, but she said since 1990. So in 24 years, the Americans invested $5 billion in Ukraine.
Okay.
Which is nothing.
Cheap.
It's not much, no. For example, the Ukrainians had 1,200 nuclear warheads. And one of the reasons, so they got a guarantee from the United States, Great Britain, and Russia that the guaranteed independence for giving the nuclear weapons back to Russia, because the Americans at the time, they didn't want many nuclear powers. So the Ukrainians gave these nuclear warheads back to Russia, and the Russians were basically bankrupt. The Russians couldn't transport them and secure them. So the Americans paid for it. The Americans paid $500 million to securely get the nuclear weapons out of Ukraine and gave them to Russia, which in retrospective was a big mistake.
Wow.
They should have kept these nuclear weapons. One of the conditions for this deal was the independence of the Ukraine. Another thing, the Russians signed this deal, made this deal to get the nuclear weapons back and guaranteed the independence of Ukraine. So again, they are breaking contracts there.
Oh, wow. You are raising a bunch of issues that I didn't even know. So the Russians are party to all kinds of agreements that they've signed on to, and that it's in writing. Oh, goodness. Very interesting.
But they have excuses. Oh, actually, you see, it was signed to this agreement without these drunkards. Eltsin signed the agreement. Russians have their own excuse for everything, I mean, being
like
a superpower. If I remember correctly, the Jews gave the nuclear weapons for the Soviet Union. So
true.
So basically, you have an aggressive imperialist state with a bunch of nuclear weapons, like 1,800, but they also have a lot of nuclear heads that are not inserted in ballistic weapons, and they could be used for like a tactical nukes. So, and take in mind that the Soviet military doctrine insists on implementation of tactical nukes, and they think that using tactical nukes wouldn't lead to a global nuclear war. So for them, actually, using a small 5 megaton nuclear bombs or 5-15 megaton nuclear bombs is okay, according to them.
You know, this is
so basically.
This is an interesting topic, if I may just interject with a bit of history. South Africa under apartheid developed nuclear weapons, and they actually had many creative reasons why they wanted to develop nuclear technology. Initially, it was even for engineering uses that they came up with in the 1960s. But by the 1980s, because of the Russians in Angola and the South African army fighting with high-tech weapons against high-tech Russian weapons, the South African generals pushed hard for South Africa to build actual nuclear bombs. And they started, I'm not sure if they started in the early 1980s. And one of the reasons why the South African generals were pushing for it was that they feared that the Russians might use tactical nukes on the South African army and pop the South African army with tactical nukes in Angola. So that's why South Africa started building nuclear weapons. And just as a fun piece of input for you guys, I actually visited President P.W. Botha, who had been the president of South Africa, and when I visited him in his library, he had a little book. This is a bit of white pride for you. He had a little book of which there were only 250 copies, and a copy was given to him. And this little book was written by the whites who were responsible for the nuclear program. And in the 5 days that I stayed there, I quickly read through this little book and gave it back. And sadly, I have no photos of it or anything. But I want to tell you a secret, that between France and Germany, that France is the main reason that South Africa's got nuclear technology, but West Germany helped South Africa a lot on military stuff and other input, and also probably they gave input on the nuclear stuff. Do you know that the whole South African nuclear weapons program was done by 1,000 white people only? 1,000 white people did all the nuclear stuff. They even built nuclear bombs in Pretoria, the capital city, which is not a big city. It's like 600,000. They even built their nuclear weapons. They were assembling them underground, under buildings, and they put everything together. And they built six nuclear weapons. It was all done quietly, and it all worked perfectly. And if you compare it with like Iran, that's been trying to get nuclear weapons for like the last freaking 15 years, okay? The whites of South Africa very quietly built and assembled everything. I've got some of the pictures of that they had delivery systems, they got missiles, everything was done, but was done by just 1,000 white people. And what a freaking achievement. And then they later go on to destroy it. Oh, but quite a nice little achievement there. Anyway, sorry for interrupting. If you carry on.
No, it's a good point, because there are real countries and there are not real countries. And one of the major points of being a real nation and a real country is that you are able to defend your territory on your own. And if you are dependent on the protection of others, you are not a real country. Russia, for example, is a real country because they have nuclear weapons. They can protect their own territory. France has nuclear weapons. Britain, America. They don't need to ask for help. But all these... Germany as well is not a real country, because we need the protection of the nuclear shield of the Americans to defend ourselves. If the Americans say, we don't protect Germany, the Russians can just invade us because they have nuclear weapons. What can we do against them? So the South Africans were very right about this. They understood. Look at what North Korea is doing. They call the guy insane or whatever, but he knows perfectly well. He understands that if he doesn't have nuclear weapons, he's fucked. He cannot sustain his rulership. And this is also very important for Europe. We need nuclear weapons, and we need to be able to defend our own territory. If we cannot do that, we are not real countries, and we are not a real nation or a union or whatever. If we need to ask the Americans, please protect us, please help us, then we are in a slave status. We are serfs.
Yes. If I may say, you know, recently, you know, I'm 100% on your side, guys, because I also look at it and I say to myself, why, you know, all this mythology of, oh, Europeans can't protect themselves. Can you fuck off? Europeans have been protecting themselves since before America existed and were doing absolutely fucking fine before World War II, before we got to the crushing of Germany and World War II. Europeans know how to fight. Virtually every freaking military innovation and 99% of military history and achievements and growth in military knowledge comes from freaking Europe, okay? So the whole notion that, oh, in the modern age, Europeans somehow are demented and they don't know how to defend themselves, fuck off. It's because America is preventing Europeans from defending themselves. And I mean, you can just look at what the Americans are doing. They've got military bases everywhere. They've got nuclear weapons on European soil. And take careful note of another American strategy that nobody ever comments on, is that have you noticed how over the decades, the Americans have destroyed the capability, the scientific and technological capabilities of European nations to build like their own aircraft, for example. I think Sweden is probably the only one that can build military aircraft. But, well, I think there's now a European Eurofighter. But, I mean, the Europeans, even the British, even the retarded British could build like all kinds of advanced aircraft years ago. And even the Canadians, I saw videos. There was an amazing jet fighter that the Canadians built. There was also an amazing jet aircraft that the British built. And notice, like in the case of the Canadians, the Americans came and interfered with the Canadians, probably took the technology, and the Canadians had to shut down their stuff. Notice how everybody's got to buy American weapons, F-35s, F-16s, etc. It's like the whole of the most important military technology now is based in America only, and everybody's got to get their stuff. So, and then you had like Trump coming and boasting. He said it not too long ago. He said, "Oh, I told the Europeans that, you know, without us, you know, we could leave them and let the Russians conquer them." I was thinking, fuck you, man. It's you bastards that have stopped the Germans. You've interfered with the ability of others to do their stuff. You know, if you left the Germans alone, if Germany was an independent country, I'm sure Germany would have no problem rearming itself pronto, pronto. And I mean, you just have to look at some of your weapons, like what's it, that Panzer 2000, that lovely heavy artillery, the Leopard 2s. I mean, you can see German submarines, most silent submarines in the world. Germans are more than capable of defending themselves. I, if I may say my own view, I think that despite Europe being part of NATO and everything, I do think that there is some kind of even high-level resentment among the Europeans of being bossed around by America, and that is why they don't even invest in their own militaries, because I think they don't like being lectured by America all the time. I mean, it's all garbage. And is Germany even an independent country? It's a discussion I think we've touched on before, which we don't believe. It's not a real country.
It's The potential of making their own weapons of mass destruction is there, at least what I call the older generation of weapons of mass destruction. Germany could build weapons of mass destruction, like nukes, but they're lacking, they closed even their nuclear plants, which is also another trick of the Putinist fifth column. France could build nuclear, they have nukes, and the Brits have nukes, but the Brits will ally with America in every situation. And
exactly.
France is France. So basically, another country that could build nukes, even though that they don't have nukes, is actually Ukraine. Ukraine could build nukes. They have
every country that has nuclear facilities, electric facilities, can build nukes.
Yes,
it's
definitely
called border technology. So you are on the border for nuclear weapons if you have nuclear facilities. So even, but, let's say, even the Finns or the Norwegians or whatever, they could do it. It's not that complicated.
But the Ukrainians already built nukes. I mean, they built the nukes for the Soviet Union.
Yeah, and don't forget, there's another important part, which is even more expensive. This is the rocket technology. Why these superpowers have space programs? The space programs are mainly there because of the development of intercontinental ballistic missiles. And this is a thing most nations cannot build. You need the missiles, not only the warhead.
That's a good point. Good point. South Africa also at one point was considering a space program for exactly those reasons. You're quite right.
Mm-hmm.
Quite
mm-hmm.
right.
And that's why you need if you want to build a European army, which they're talking about. By the way, all the points, all the ideas of Adolf Hitler are coming to fruition.
Explain.
They just don't realize. Well, first of all, there's these, Christopher could talk more about this, of course, this idea of the German nationalism. I believe from 19th century, from the First World War, the march to the east, and the destruction of Russia and opening territory, living space and resources for the Germans. And basically, this is they're talking about the eventually that Russian Federation could fall apart because of the great financial and military pressure in eventual war in Ukraine. But actually, America is against that because in quite obscure notion, Biden mentioned that they are concerned about the situation that could lead to balkanization of the Russia, because they don't want to deal with many Russian states that could go, that could be very dangerous for them. They could have nuclear weapons and military potential, and who knows, maybe even much more radical than Putin. That's why Europe, the European leaders are talking about the destruction of Russia. Ukraine and the Eastern Europe definitely wants destruction of Russia. America don't want destruction of Russia.
That's
and another thing is, and this thing that I mentioned is what was in German, Drang nach Osten. And
yeah.
Another thing, and of course the quite suspicious claim of the Plan Ost, right?
Yeah.
And the creation of the living space that was not a really a new idea. I mean, the Teutonic Order obviously were doing the same thing. So in East Prussia, like the rest, and you can see how the geography is the destiny of the people, because basically Kaliningrad was Königsberg. And right now they're talking about the destiny of Kaliningrad, because Kaliningrad is, the rumor is that, first of all, they are quite strong Russian military presence in Kaliningrad. And the second rumor is that in Kaliningrad there they have nuclear weapons. So Poland is making this suggestion that because Kaliningrad actually belonged to Prussia, and of course there is no Prussia around, the next state that could inherit Kaliningrad after the fall of the Russian Empire is Poland.
I can tell an interesting anecdote about Kaliningrad if you want to hear it.
Go for it.
Mm-hmm.
So in 1989, when there was the so-called German reunification, the Soviet Union was totally bankrupt. And so Mr. Gorbachev met with Chancellor Kohl at the time, and he said, what about East Germany? Kohl said, what do you mean East Germany? We are making a reunification. And Gorbachev said, no, the real East Germany. You know, Königsberg, Danzig, Stettin, what is now part of Poland and so on. Do you want it back? And Kohl said, okay, yeah, of course. What do you want for it? And Gorbachev said, I want 40 million marks. I'm not sure if it was 40 or 60, a billion. 40 or 60 billion marks. And we
billion.
Would, yeah, and we would have it all back up to Königsberg, right? So total reunification of Germany. And Kohl said, okay, I have to think about it. And he talked to our, at that time, foreign minister, which was called Hans-Dietrich Genscher. And he said, no, impossible.
Why? I don't
want that. If you do this, I will split up the coalition and you will not be chancellor anymore. Because he was from another party, from FDP, and there was a coalition at the time. And without this second party, Kohl couldn't be chancellor. Right. So he basically said, I don't want that. And I always ask myself, why? What was going on there? And later it came out that Hans-Dietrich Genscher was a Stasi agent with the code name E.M. Tulpe. Tulpe is tulip. Right. So he had so basically our foreign minister at the time was a Stasi agent, which is a KGB agent, because the Stasi was under total control of the KGB. So here you see how this works, that this is all, at times it's very hard to understand that the Russian, the Soviet General Secretary offers this, and from circles of the KGB, they say you have to prevent this. Right? So there was a possibility that we would get East Germany back for 60 billion marks at the time, but we didn't get it back.
Wow.
I mean, it sounds plausible, and it's kind of stupid, because 60 billion is not so high top dollar if you think about it.
No, we invested the total cost of the reunification of Germany, basically for the modernization of the former GDR, was 3 trillion.
Yeah.
So we invested $3,000 billion in Middle Germany, or what they now call East Germany. So 60 billion would be nothing.
And you have basically the whole Baltic shore again.
The question is, I don't know what the plans were with the Polish people there. I mean, obviously you cannot just kick them out, so they have to stay there. And we would have a huge Polish population in Germany. I don't know. I mean, if you think about it, it's quite complicated to do, right? You cannot just drive them out and expel them from there.
You can expel them. I mean, what... they did the same with the Germans, basically.
Trust me, at that time, if Kohl would have said, okay, we're going to expel the Polish, what do you think would Maggie Thatcher say about that, or François Mitterrand, or George Bush Sr.? What would they say about it, right?
Yeah.
Well, guys, I want to ask you some other stuff as we've got maybe another 30 minutes, then we can then we will have done 2 hours. But it's been very fascinating hearing all the different stuff you've got. I want to ask you a little bit about two things. About the first thing is Azov. We know, and let me just go through a little bit about this Jew Zelensky who runs Ukraine. You know, it seems to me like most whites are not ruled by their real leaders. Like I think we've discussed with Germany, or my German friend here in South Africa, he said to me, up until Merkel, he said that only one leader of Germany since World War II has been an actual real German, and the others aren't. Merkel, the Polish Jew. Now look at Ukraine, where you've got a lovely country filled with white people, but a freaking Jew is running the country. And not even a high class Jew, or are any Jews high class? That's obviously a no. That doesn't have a positive answer. But I mean, Zelensky being some kind of weirdo comedian with almost some porno crap that he's done, like real low class garbage. You know, how did this little porno Jew comedian rat get to be the president of Ukraine? And from what I can see, by the way, I've seen that video where he's got the cocaine on his desk and video footage and so forth, and the Western media has been running around, no, that's fake news, that wasn't cocaine on his desk, but me, I looked at that, it looks very freaking real to me. And I see that. I also believe he's a homosexual. He's got crime connections, and he seems to be making. I was reading. I think some European sources said he's now making $100 million a month. So he's obviously wheeling and dealing with what the whites have got. But to me, when I look at it, it's like a Jew piece of garbage is ruling Ukraine. But most of Ukraine is still white, and most of the people in the government are still white, and they seem genuine people to me. You know, that's the one topic. And the other thing is, please tell me about the Azov Battalion, because people are saying, oh, the Azov Battalion are not, there's like links to Israel, links to Jews. Can you kind of just unpack the whole Zelensky Azov Battalion stuff, please?
This is bullshit. So basically, there is no links of Israel and Jews. This is constant. So basically, I'm not an advocate of Zelensky, but I don't know that he's homosexual. He has a wife and kids. If he's homosexual, I don't know. I know that he's corrupt, because Jews and politics, I think that actually before the war, he has very low approval rating, something like 11%.
Because but every president of Ukraine since the fall of the Soviet Union was corrupt. Yeah. Just read that. That's nothing special there. I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a fact. One of the reasons that their military actually is not like top class military, because it is very interesting. Ukraine had the potential to be really top European country, like really top country. Like they have built infrastructure from the Soviet Union. They have industrial potential that is actually on par with, well, I won't say Germany, but it's at least on par with Poland. And the America invested a lot of money in Poland these days. And the Ukrainians have this infrastructure inherited from the Soviet Union. Then they have enormous energy potential. They had 15 nuclear plants. then they have gas reserves, they have different coal and different mineral reserves, and they had in the past they had a quite large part of the Black Sea shorelines. And I've saw, yes, Zelensky, it looks like it is corrupt, but I've watched documentaries about Ukraine in the last few years, and I talk with my Ukrainian refugees, and it looks like, yes, maybe they are stealing money, but they are also they were investing money in Ukraine, and they were rebuilding the infrastructure. They were the Mariupol before the fucking Soviet invasion was quite nice looking city. Like it was a city basically on the border with these separatist states, and they were fighting there. And the separatists, the innocent separatists, the victims of Ukrainian aggression, actually were shelling Mariupol. But it was a very beautiful city, like really nice looking city with all this infrastructure, with working factories. So I don't know about the Ukrainian. I mean, I bet they're corrupt, but on the other hand, Ukraine looks much better, looked much better than if it was part of the Russian Confederation. This is what I can tell. Because basically the Russian oligarchs that are also Jews, they will just suck the Ukraine dry, and this will be the end of independent Ukraine, and they will just use the resources of Ukraine for their imperialist goals. But going back to Azov, so you need quite to understand the history of Ukrainians. There are references of Ukrainians, as I said, at least since 16th century, like independent people. But actually, if you go back to Kievan Rus, obviously Kiev, the mother of all Russian cities, and this is my understanding that is very, very, very simple logic, that Kiev is in present-day Ukraine, present-day Ukrainians are descendants of the people that created Ukrainian Rus, not some people in Moscow that were not even part of the confederation of the Rus cities at that point. So basically Ukrainians built this nationalism under different influences, but since the end of 18th century, the beginning of 19th century, this national feeling was rising. And of course, there are a lot of famous poets, like different famous people that were supposedly Russians, but actually they said for themselves that they are Ukrainians. For example, Taras Shevchenko, which is quite famous. And during the Second World War, Ukraine was kind of 50-50. Quite large percent of the Ukrainians actually were on the side of the Germans. There were two Waffen-SS divisions. One is called Galician, and the other is called Kruzaken. And there were predominantly Ukrainian speakers, and I suppose because Galicians were predominantly Catholics, they were also predominantly Catholics by faith. But not only, because Kruzaken, I believe they're mostly Orthodox. So basically these are the 50%. And the other 50% of the Ukrainians were still fighting for the Soviets. So you have this conflict even back in the time. And also you have these Ukrainian nationalists like Bandera, Josip Bandera, that was kind of allied with the Germans. And that's why the present-day Russian imperialists are using this slang term Banderovtsi, Banderis, against the Ukrainian nationalists. But Bandera was also kind of allied with the Germans, but also at some point were fighting against the Germans. It is because of the specific German policies in Ukraine, which My suggestion is that they made some mistakes. There will be a little bit more, more understanding towards the Ukrainian and Belarusian people, then there will be a large support for the Germans in these places, because a lot of people didn't like the Soviet. So anyway, these people that formed Azov, they came from football fan clubs. Like, I believe it was something like Middle East. And these, a lot of the founders, actually, their forefathers were members of the Galician Waffen-SS. So it's kind of family history. And basically, the group that formed the first volunteers back in 2014 was called, I believe, Sect 82. Like Sect 82 referred to the for the years of forming of their favorite football club, but also behind that was another nationalist organization like Hammers, like Hammerskins or something like that. And the thing is that the nationalists were like the storming of like SR, like the brown battalions of the Maidan revolutions. There are a lot of nationalists that were actually dying and fighting against the pro-Russian forces back in the time. So quite brave people. And because some of the idiots like Erich Streicher claimed that there were no more national socialists than Aryan nations. Well, now, not all the people that were in Azov, because Azov is not only a fighting unit, but a whole organization, actually, including civilian organization, female corps, propaganda units, people that are organizing education camps for children and things like that. So a lot of people are quite well educated. They're doing what national socialists must do, which means working with the young generation, so to say. And they were quite successful in that regard, but not so successful in political activities like elections. A lot of people in Ukraine still thinking that Azov before the war. Right now, a lot of people actually Azov are much more popular right now than before. So basically, going back, this is what their bravery basically brought to the table, because basically these people in the beginning, so I believe yesterday or 2 days ago, Azov had anniversary, 8 years since their founding. In the beginning, they were called Chorny Corpus, so Black Corps. Which is also a reference to the Waffen-SS, by the way, because they're also called the Black Corps. And this is referring to their dresses or uniforms in the beginning in 2014, because they're all in black, including black balaclavas. So, and this is opposing to the little green men of the Russians. So basically, the Ukrainians had little black men, and the Russians had little green men, referring to the occupational force of Crimea. So basically, Azov was formed on voluntary principle by these, national socialists, the core group, like 200 men. Were obviously national socialist, ultra nationalist, as they're called. And they were rather successful, which is kind of surprising because they didn't have a previous military experience, maybe with the exception of some of the leading members and some of the people that trained them. And they basically managed to repel the attacks of the Ukrainian separatists in 2014 and to capture the city of Mariupol in 2014, which is also interesting because Mariupol for some short period of time, like a couple of months, was captured by the separatists. So Azov, back in the time, managed to capture the city. And that's why they were named after Azov Sea, because this is their battle, like first successful battle. And because basically these nationalist battalions were the only capable force back in 2014, the Ukrainian army was in very bad shape. Like literally they had something like 10,000-15,000 capable men of fighting. Most of the officers were unwilling to fight the Russians, and a lot of them surrendered to the separatists. There were the equipment was in very bad shape, and so on and so on. So basically I think that Russians had the golden opportunity to capture Ukraine back in 2014. But for some reason, Putin didn't give the order to capture Ukraine, for some reason. Maybe there was some political stuff behind the scene. I'm not sure. But basically, what happened was that Azov received this aureole of elite force. At some point, they were integrated in the National Guard because they were voluntary battalions at first. And they were not the only nationalist battalions. There were several other battalions that are also nationalist, like Zaporizhia. Siege battalion, like Pravi sector, the right sector, like Aidar, they were also quite radical nationalists. Of course, Tornado, which I don't know with what to compare Tornado. They were a little bit like Dirlewanger, quite brutal types. So basically, these type of nationalists and national socialist elements were integrated in the National Guard. Now, the government of Ukraine were never dominated by nationalists, like real nationalists, but there are elements that recognize that these guys are highly motivated. And this is obvious because basically in the first few months, basically the guys were buying with their own money, their equipment, food, rations, weapons, dying on the battlefield, which is the highest form of sacrifice. So for the government, this was also cheap and quite efficient. You have guys that were fighting for their ideals. And maybe your political opinion is not exactly like yours, but they're keeping your ass. So basically the government decided to support them by including them in the National Guard.
If I may ask, do you have any idea how many there are in Azov and... First of all, in the Azov regiment, and also these other highly motivated nationalists. This is very interesting. Got any rough idea of how many there were?
Only the Waffen Azov, so to say, or the whole organization. The whole organization, I believe, are around 10,000 men and women and children, because they are... kids in the Azov, the kids of most of the members, I suppose. But how many are the fighting men? This is, I don't know. maybe 3,000, maybe now in Azov, like in Mariupol, maybe around 1,000, maybe 1,500. This is my understanding, because there are units like reconnaissance units and special units that from Azov that are all around Ukraine. It's not like all the Azov in Mariupol. And right now they're receiving quite a lot of volunteers because they receive this glory of being these super elite units. And according to the Americans, they're the best elite units in the world right now, because obviously wow. they're holding Russian forces that are 5 to 20 times their size. I mean, this is quite amazing if you think about it. The Russians are pushing this city of 500,000 men with 12 to 20,000 men since the beginning of March, and now is the almost the midst of May, and they are still not capturing the whole of the city. It's very, very interesting. Yeah, and you must take in mind that the Russians have all these numerical superiority, but also firepower superiority. I mean, they have all these tanks and artillery and rockets and a total dominance in the air. So going back into the Azov history. So basically, the guy that formed Azov is Andrei Belitsky. He's not part of Azov anymore. He has other, because they were part of the National Guard, and also he tried to create another ultra-nationalist party. Basically, the guy was famous with his speech in 2014, which basically, I'm quoting right now, that Ukraine must take part into crusade against the superhumans.
And nice.
So basically, the guy was kind of, And about the Jewish connection in Azov. So basically, what happened was, after receiving all this battle experience back in 2014 and 2015, a lot of volunteers went to Azov. So you have this core group of 200 men, and they attracted a lot of people from all around the world. Like you have Germans, Swedes, Polish, a lot of Russians. Actually, I believe that the largest group of people that are fighting outside of Ukraine are Russians. Azov as
you mean Russians?
Generally
Russians in Azov.
Yes.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, basically they're Russians. So basically there was another thing. Units like private sector, they are coming from the west of Ukraine, and they generally they're speaking Ukrainian. Meanwhile, Azov are coming from east of Ukraine, and they're speaking Russian.
Oh wow!
And basically they're a little bit like a little competition between these two. And that's why these in Azov, you have these racialist Russians that were running away from Russia, because basically Putin were hunting down the racialist nationalists. And they were running out of Russia, and they were joining the ranks of the military and the civilian corps of Azov. Quite famous is, for example, the founder of a group called Molot, which is rather popular in racialist circles. And he joined the propaganda and the military corps of Azov, and he's Russian. So basically, So basically, you have these people joining us off from all around the world. You have Albanians, you have Bulgarians, you have Swedes, you have Danes, French.
Wow! So Azov is turning into a lovely little Waffen SS.
Okay, but there is a but into the story. So. Not all these people are National Socialists. So basically, from back in 2015, there was an interview with the speaker of Azov. And because there was a spurgy Jews in America, I believe in 2015, Obama was in charge. And the Senate of the American Senate was very... concerned that American aid will go to different Nazis. And they were talking about giving a status of terrorist organization. So because now for Azov, the Russians were creating quite a lot of black propaganda for Azov. Like there was, for example, video of supposedly members of Azov that were crucifying communists. This video, by the way, is fake. This is proven back in 2014, but a lot of people don't know that, so they're sharing this thing. So. My understanding is that Azov was, they're not angels, but I don't think that they're creating a lot of fuss, because most of the time they were busy training. So basically, the statement was, when they were asked about their political preferences, the speaker of Azov said that from 10 to 20, actually maybe a little bit more, like 30% of Azov were National Socialists. They had people that are not National Socialists exactly, they're nationalists, but the fact is that they, in the early days, they had a lot of photos with swastika banners, with the eagles, with the different rules and things like that. When I say runes, it's interesting fact that actually there was a special cult in the Azov. So basically, because of the different backgrounds of the volunteers, they obviously had different religions. You have Norse pagans, you have Catholics, you have Orthodox, you have atheists, like that, but for the Ukrainians and Russian members, which are the majority in Azov, they had a special religion, which is mixture between Norse and Slavic paganism, and they had this big wooden idol of God Rot, which means Rot in Slavic languages means family. Or tribe, if you will. So they had this big, I don't know how to call it, totem, and they swear allegiance to the rot, to the blood oath, so to say, to defend the fatherland and their nation. So basically, Azov is very interesting. As a concept is very interesting. It also aesthetically is very close to the National Socialists of old, so to say. Of course, they're pretending because of the media attention and because of the pressure of the West. So a lot of people don't know that, but two or maybe three times in their history, they were under sanction from the United States and Canada. In 2018, the military aid was stopped from the United States. I believe in the previous year, Canada stopped any kind of military aid to Azov because they were accused of being a neo-Nazi terrorist organization or something. But it looks like some let's say, more intelligent people in the Pentagon pulled some strings into the military aid and training of Azov was renewed. And basically, they were trained on the program, a military program of NATO. I believe that they were trained in the Baltic states, predominantly in specifically in defensive operations. And they're doing this quite successfully to this moment. I mean, they're defending. So this is off. I mean, they had humanitarian corps, as I said, propaganda corps, and they had kind of... another interesting thing is that in 2019, Zelensky wanted to disarm Azov and other nationalist battalions. But there was a big scandal, so... Basically, he decided not to disarm them, which was again was good decision because obviously to this day they are fighting the Russians.
Wow, this is very interesting.
There is actually a video of Zelensky talking to one of the guys of Azov, and he says to him, "You put down your weapons. I am the president of this country, blah, yeah. blah, 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 blah."
Yeah.
And
yeah.
the other guy says, "No, we're keeping yes. our weapons."
Nice.
But take in mind that Zelensky was trying to disarm the Azov because he was under pressure from the Americans, most likely.
Yeah.
Or another thing is that people don't realize about Zelensky is that when he was elected, he was seen by the more radical nationalists as a basically pro-Russian candidate. If you look at the history of Zelensky, because he was an actor, he was quite popular in Russia. And I found a lot of his, I don't know, comic sketches that he was laughing on Ukrainian nationalism. He was laughing at Banderovtsi, the Banderists, the ultra-nationalists. And he was praised in Russia when he was elected. So basically,
the Russians liked him?
Yeah.
When he was elected?
Russians liked them. Yes.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So basically, and also he had these connections with the Russian oligarchs. So it's like, I don't know, maybe he decided to listen more to the Americans. And take in mind that Americans, if they wanted to prevent the war in Ukraine, they could just send American troops there and Russians will never attack Ukraine. The other thing that Americans could do was really to build up Ukrainian forces. Like they could really create a super army from Ukrainian army. Like giving them really heavy equipment and things like that. But no, actually, America didn't do that. So my suspicion is that Americans were not doing that because they didn't want to irritate the Russians. And they didn't want to irritate the Russians, and they expected Ukraine to fall rather easily. And because of the whole the whole debacle in Afghanistan, they were afraid that if they give a lot of high-tech weapons to Ukraine, these weapons will fall in the hands of the Russians.
Yes.
And you must look at the early days of the war, that the whole world is supporting Ukraine, but actually they were not doing anything in the first week. Like
yes.
they're not sending
yes.
money, weapons, nothing. And they're just waiting what will happen. And then just the Americans realized that the Ukrainians are fighting and they could give at least a bloody nose to the Russians. So they started quite conservatively to send weapons to the Ukrainians. Ukrainians will still continue to fight and to destroy Russian tanks. And then the Americans said, "Fuck yeah, we can by proxy war, we can destabilize Russia and give them a lesson without destroying them." And that's why I'm not absolutely sure that the West will support Ukraine to such extent that they could defeat, especially what you said, total Ukrainian victory. I don't think that the support of the West will reach a such extent that they could defeat Russia easily.
This is also due that they're supporting them at all. It's also due to the pressure of the public and the media. Because you can see that, especially in Germany, that our government is hesitating and we don't want to deliver and blah, blah, blah. And then the media says, we must give them tanks. We must support them, support Ukraine. And the whole population is behind it. And basically the German population is pressing the government to support Ukraine.
One thing I'd like to add is that I was watching various videos, and I was watching American and I think even British officers and generals, and I noticed early on in the war, a little while into the war, that these generals and officers were starting to realize that the Ukrainians are really fighting. And it was really impressing these generals. So I also think that there's like high-ranking officers who must have gone to their own governments and so forth and said, you know what, we got an opportunity here. Let's pop these Russians. These guys are putting up a hell of a fight. That's part of what I also see.
Yeah, I also think that every war is teaching you a lesson, right? Yeah. In the Vietnam War, you learn new things about guerrilla fighting. In the Yom Kippur War in 1972, you learned about the vulnerability of tanks to rockets and so on. And I think even the generals and military experts, they just didn't expect that you can smash so many tanks with javelins and Panzerfaust and so on. So I think that they are a little bit surprised that this is even possible, that you can with infantry and that you can attack their supply lines and so on. So I think the Russian army was overestimated, their capability of using combined forces and so on. I mean, their weakness is obvious. They are not using their air force correctly. They don't have the supply lines going well and so on. I think that many people in the West, in Western military, they were quite surprised how this is working out for the Ukrainians.
Well, guys, this has been a really good chat, but we've been at it for quite a while. So I think we're starting to head into the military stuff, which I think we must talk about as a separate topic. But I'm gonna end off on one thing. I'll tell you something that I came across, Chris. I watched a video one day, not long ago, where I think it was the American General Wesley Clark. I think it was Wesley Clark. And while he was being interviewed about Ukraine, he began to say a couple of things, which I think is some white pride here. Not that it was intended as such, but listen to this. He began to say that, you know, America's been giving weapons to sort of the Third World and so forth for decades, and he was saying that people aren't always that keen to fight. They aren't that motivated. And then he basically said that here there are people who are very motivated to fight. And then he basically implied, he said, you know, you've got a first world people who want to fight. And they are easy to kind of teach. They like learn fast. He's almost saying, you know, for the first time ever, we're fucking giving advanced weapons to whites, and the whites are fucking just whacking the shit out of the enemy. I've got the video, and he's basically implying that like, fuck me, you know, for decades we were given like these things to all kinds of retards and stuff, and now we're giving it to other people, and fucking hell, they're like just going crazy. And I really think that, and you know, some of the other stuff I was checking, those Ukrainians aren't stupid, man. They were even using like normal home drones and things, and starting to use it for military stuff. Oh, we could go on and on, but I think on the military stuff, I would like to just say that thing that I sent you, Georgi, where I said that I think I'm starting to think that the Ukrainians can drive the Russians out of Ukraine, maybe in a year. That is a topic for other discussion. I've been following some military reports every day, and I'm starting to see stuff. And the latest thing I'm seeing is the Russians, the Ukrainians. First of all, the Ukrainians defeated that huge Russian column. And you know, the Russians came with the, you know, those terrible those fuel air bombs. They came with those armored weapons that fire those fuel air bombs. And people were saying they're gonna flatten Kiev to the ground. And I was also thinking, oh God, the Ukrainians are gonna die. But you know what? Those Russian fuel air, those nasty fuel air weapons seem to have been of very little effect. So what exactly did the Ukrainians do? And you remember all those long columns of armored columns that were standing for like a week or two, and eventually that entire, it looks to me, I stand to be corrected, but it looks like that army that was heading for Kiev was like about 40,000 strong. And it had heavy armor, heavy stuff, and they were beaten, man. They were beaten, and possibly thousands and thousands of them were killed. Maybe, I don't know what the exact number is. And they retreated out of the north. And now, I'll tell you what the latest thing is that I saw was, I was following the fighting around Kharkiv, which is the second biggest city. And the Ukrainians are in the midst of a big offensive. And they've chased the Russians out of Kharkiv. And they are clearing the Russians away from Kharkiv. They reckon it's just a couple more days. And the Russian artillery will not even be able to touch Kharkiv anymore. But the key thing I was reading was that the Ukrainians claim that, and this is something I'd never heard of before, hey, is, I came across references that the Ukrainians were defeating Soviet armor using long-range artillery, mobile artillery. I never even knew that it was possible for those shells to actually destroy tanks. I thought you needed special anti-tank, anti-armor shells. But the Ukrainians are saying that they've actually destroyed a lot. They said that the Stingers and other things helped to slow down the Russians, but that it is their self-propelled guns that are actually killing the most tanks. And listen to this. They are killing the Russian tanks using 30 and 40-year-old Russian self-propelled guns. They are about to buy about 100 advanced American and I think European and British self-propelled guns. Now listen to this. Those self-propelled guns are so high-tech, they can fire a shell from 20 to 30 kilometers, and they can fire it with such accuracy that they can hit within 2 meters of a target at any range on the first shot. First shot. One shot, one kill. And those are the weapons that they are busy getting. And I want to tell you, when I was looking at that, plus there's other suggestions, I was looking at this and I was thinking, you know, these Ukrainians, if they can carry on doing offensives like this, I don't see how the Russians are going to stay. But we can talk more on the military stuff when we do another show. But I want to thank both of you for your input. Guys, you brought up lots of stuff I've never heard, and I'm sure the audience has never heard this stuff. Your close on input on Ukraine and your knowledge of the Russians is so excellent. I'm so grateful. If you have any final words, if both of you have anything final you want to wind up on, then, you know, say your say.
Yeah, my final word is that history tells us that without American support, the Russians cannot win a war. Remember?
Well, you're remember now talking about Adolf Hitler in the time of Barbarossa. Absolutely.
They lost in Finland. They lost against the Japanese. They lost in Afghanistan and so on. The only big war they won was with a huge American support. So don't worry
said,
about the Russians.
Perfectly said. Oh, that is a wonderful one. That is so freaking true.
Thanks for having me, and it was a good show, and until the next time.
Excellent.
Final words for me. Don't spurk against Azov and talking bullshit without knowing primary sources, and take example from Azov, because they are the closest thing that we have to NSDAP and Waffen-SS since 1945. And hail victory.
Hail victory, guys. Wow, that was excellent information. Thank you so much.
So for all this awesome, neat, wonderful stuff, you know, you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites. We gave you Breaking Bad and all the songs by Creed, all the cast of Friends and trash like Tara Reid, a virtual world of porn so you can spill your seed. Ray-Ban glasses, leggy blondes with tiny asses, frisbee sports and fancy coffee too, energy efficient lights. And so for all this awesome, neat, wonderful stuff, you know, you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites.
Thank the whites, you know you don't.